Welcome. Good morning. Can you hear me okay? Yeah. Great. My name is Katie Kingry Page, and it's my pleasure to welcome you today, this morning, on this beautiful spring day, to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan. You're welcome here, no matter who you love, no matter how you define yourself, wherever you come from, and no matter the burdens you carry. We are a community of seekers bound together by our common humanity. Today's service is titled, Being Here, a Beat, a Bishop, and a Buddhist. We're joined by a lay leader from the Shawnee Mission Unitarian Universalist Church, Bernard Norcott Mahaney. He's an educator and a lifelong leader in the intellectual traditions of the humanities. We're lucky to have him with us to provoke our understanding of this month's theme, which is balance, through a series of reflections on deep listening. Before we get further into it, I want to point your attention to a few announcements in the order of service. Most important is Easter's coming up on April 1st, and it also happens to fall on April Fool's Day, which is extra fun. And we will have our traditional Easter potluck brunch following the service and our traditional Easter egg hunt that day. Please also put on your calendar our annual meeting of the UUFM. Our annual business meeting will be held after the service on April 22nd. And then one last announcement. Most of you are probably aware, but we could have some newcomers here as well. If you have a joy or concern that you would like to have shared during the service, there's a basket outside, right outside the doors on a little table, and there are some cards there in the basket. Please feel free to write your joy or concern on that card. I could also maybe ask for a volunteer. I'm going to ask for Ruby. Ruby? When it gets to be the time of offertory, I'll have Ruby just walk up and down the aisles with a couple of extra cards. So if you didn't get a chance to grab one as you were coming in and you'd like to write a joy or concern, Ruby will walk up and down with some of those cards. Okay, thank you very much.
Hear these words of Carl Menninger, one of your neighbors just up the street in Topeka. When we are listened to, it creates us, makes us unfold and expand. Ideas actually begin to grow within us and come to life. It makes people happy and free when they are listened to. When we listen to people, there is an alternating current, and this recharges us so that we never get tired of each other. We are constantly being recreated. And now the chalice lighting, am I doing that? Or okay. It says in the order of service, the unison affirmation. At Shawnee Mission, we have one. But I thought so that we could have a unison affirmation, let me share this affirmation from UU Camp. I will say it, and then we will all say it together. It is good to be.
It is good to be here.
It is good to be here together. So let's try one more. It's good to be. It's good to be here.
It's good to be
here together. And now hymn 312, I believe. Here on the paths of every day, which I think I've never heard before, so.
Yes, please rise and join us, 312.
The Stalwart are here to sing this lovely piece. I might say that Sarah Teasdale wrote lots of poems that have peace somewhere in the title, and she found precious little of it in her own lifetime. But we are dedicated to do this. I might just point out that the music was written by Steve Mix. Mix, what's his last name?
Brad.
Pardon? Brad Nix, who is the leader, or who is head of the music department at Sterling College.
If you're young, or just young at heart, we'd like to invite you to come up here to the front of the sanctuary and join our own Sabrina Bowker for a very special story today. Please, come on up.
Okay. Hello, everybody. How you doing? Doing good? Have you ever had a time when you were real, real mad? Like you wanted to break something real mad, you were that mad? Yeah. Well, we had a cow here, Moody Cow. He got real mad too, so we're going to see how he dealt with it. You wonder why I had my shoes off. Because when you go into a Buddhist temple or when you're meditating all that, you take your shoes off. So I have my shoes off for this. Moody Cow Meditates by Carrie Lee McLean. Okay. and is dedicated to the Dalai Lama, who is dedicated to all children. You know who he is, right? Dalai Lama? No? Never heard of him? Oh, well, he's a pretty cool dude. A lot of people, one person met him and said his dog was jumping up on Dalai Lama. And when Dalai Lama left, he's like, started turning around to say something. The guy's like, ah, here, I'm going to get it. And Dalai Lama said, I hope in my next life I am as happy as that dog is. Yeah. So, okay. My name is Moody Cow. It used to be Peter, but now it's Moody Cow. It all started one stupid, rotten day when everything went wrong. First, I had a bad dream. You're going to see the monster here. A very bad dream, which involved a giant three-eyed alien. What a rotten way to wake up. I wanted to find my mom and tell her about the eight giant three-eyed alien, but I couldn't find her anywhere. He's like calling for mom. Mom? So I admit that I was in a bad mood to begin with. Then I couldn't find my skateboard. Turned out my sister had borrowed it. Borrowed. Daisy, stop drawing on my skateboard. She was drawing on a skateboard here. Okay, maybe I overacted when I pulled her tail, but it was a brand new skateboard. So then Daisy had to get me back by tripping me on the stairs. What a monster. Here he is flying down the stairs. Head first. For all you guys. Let's see. That made me mad. So mad that I could cut her doll's hair off on purpose. Oh, dear. Of course, I got in trouble for that, which made me miss the bus. I had to ride my bike all the way to school in the snow. That made me really mad. On the way home from school, I hit a snowbank and scraped my knee. There was blood everywhere. Ew, blood. The rest of the way, I couldn't stop thinking about how my rotten day was really Daisy's fault. She put me in a bad mood by drawing on my skateboard, on my new skateboard. Or maybe it was the giant three-eyed alien's fault for giving me bad dreams. Whatever. I was so mad I couldn't see straight. And when I turned into our driveway, I crashed right into my dad's truck. Ow, I think I broke my nose. Well, you can understand that with a bloody nose, knee, and a banged up nose, I was a madder than ever. Right? Super mad. Look at him. And look how mad he is. He's got flames coming out of his horns. Ah, I can't take it anymore. And then I did something crazy. I picked up my baseball and threw it right through the window on purpose. Unfortunately, my mom saw the whole thing. And there's his face when she says, what on earth do you think you're doing? She yelled. Have you lost your mind? Look at that. He's got an uh-oh face because he's in trouble. She came outside, took one look at my super mad, rotten-y day face, and I guess she felt sorry for me. Ah, are you a little moody cow? Of course, my sister, Daisy, heard her say that. She started shouting, moody cow, Peter is a moody cow. Next thing I knew, all the kids in the neighborhood joined in. We need grandfather, Mom said, and picked up the phone. Here she calling grandfather. Pretty soon, my grandfather was sitting in the sunroom on a meditation cushion. I got to sit on one, too. I hear they're calling you Moody Cow, grandfather said and smiled. I couldn't help smiling back a little. I guess Moody Cow was kind of a funny name. Here's grandpa in the full lotus, which I can't do because I'm not flexible enough. See that, he asked, as he pointed to a jar of water. This is your mind, he said. And these, he held out a little dish of sparkles, are your angry thoughts. That, I said, is a jar of water, and those are Daisy's fairy dust sparkles. Come on, Mr. Moody Cow, work with me here. Now, what we're going to do is put in a pinch of sparkles for every angry thought you have. Then we're going to sit here until they all settle down to the bottom. By the time the water's clear again, your anger will have all settled down too. It won't work, I told him. Let's just see, he said. I took a pinch of sparkles and dropped it into the water. Which angry thought is that? Grandfather asked. That's the three-eyed alien. It tried to gobble me up last night. Oh, I see. rotten way to start the day. Okay, what else? I put in another pinches for the next angry thought. This is me having to clean the toilet for a whole month for breaking the window. I hate cleaning the toilet. Me too. What else? I put in one more pinch of sparkles and said, this is Daisy drawing on my brand new skateboard with a marker. Oh, that's bad. Oh, dear, she did that? Grandfather sighed. Okay, what else? He's putting these sparkles in there. This pinch is when I missed the bus and had to ride my bike to school in the snow. You can ride a bike through snow? Grandfather asked. I have good tires. Anything else? On my way home, I scraped my knee, and I was so mad I crashed into Dad's truck. I think I broke my nose. Ouch, Grandfather said. That must have hurt. It did. Then I picked up my baseball and threw it through the window on purpose. Wow, you should put it in a double pinch for that one. I guess you really didn't have to have a moody cow day. I sure did. Okay. Is that all, Grandfather asked? Yeah, but it's a lot. Sure is. Here's more. Okay, Grandfather put the lid on the jar and shook it up real good. This jar is like your mind right now, he said, by angry thoughts bouncing around all over the place. Because, you know, when you have your mind's all bouncing around, you meditate. Let's see. Okay, now let's see what happens when we let your angry thoughts settle down, Grandfather said, putting the mind jar down in front of me. Just sit quietly and see what happens. I sat up real straight, and then I got to ring the gong. Can you guys ring the gong? Bong. Come on. Bong. Okay. I sat watching all my angry thoughts swirl around like crazy in the jar. A few thoughts slowed down and sank into the bottom. Then a few more and a few more. He says, because he's that feels good. I was just so still I could feel my heart beating. It was so quiet I could hear my breath going in and out, in and out. I felt a ray of golden sunshine coming through the window. It warmed my back, and it started to melt away the last of my anger. That's feel good when you warm up sun on your back. Finally, Grandfather rang the gong to end the meditation. He leaned over to whisper in my ear, okay, this part is important. Don't move until you can't hear the sound of the gong anymore. I cocked my head, listening closely. Bong. The ringing got softer and softer and softer until I couldn't hear it at all. Grandfather smiled and held up the jar. Well, look at this. All the sparkles have settled down, he said. And my angry thoughts have too, I said. I mean, I guess if I think about it, I could get mad again. That's probably true, he said. But we have to work pretty hard to settle them down. Let's not stir them up again. I laughed, and for the first time that day. Okay. That thing is cool, I said. Can I keep it? Sure, said Grandfather. He smiled and handed me the jar and the dish of sparkles. A few minutes each day helps keep the moody cow away. I laughed again. Thanks, Grandfather. Can we do this again tomorrow? Of course. Let's try to do this together every day. And they're walking off. I went to my room, and I put the mind jar by my bed, just in case the three-eyed alien ever comes back. Now it's been 2 whole weeks, and I haven't had one moody cow day. Isn't that great? But I decided to keep the movie the name anyway. I kind of like it. And for you guys, I got... for how to make a moody cow mind jar. So that's the end. Let me give you these here. You guys want to get you these here so you can make your own mind jar. Here you go, pass around. And that's it.
Go in love, our hearts go with you. Go enjoy our hopes go too.
I'll just give mine.
Shine your light in all you do. Oh, in love our hearts go with you. Go in joy, our hopes go too. Learn in love and grow in wisdom. Shine your light.
That was wonderful, Sabrina. This week, I experienced the joy of fellowship with other UU members while working alongside Jen and Matt Campbell, helping at their organic farm work day and meeting several members of their extended family. I was reminded of all the connections this community brings. These words from a poem by Reverend Max Coutts came to mind. Let us give thanks for the bounty of people, for children who are our second planting, and though they grow like weeds and the wind too soon blows them away, may they forgive us our cultivation and fondly remember where their roots are. Let us give thanks. As the offertory begins, may we support this community as fully as we can to strengthen these connections within and to bring our UU values to the broader community through our many actions, events, and solidarities.
So apparently there were no joys and concerns submitted. I would like to express a joy in being here with you, so we have that joy. So I'd like you to sit back in your chair, close your eyes if you feel comfortable doing so for a silent meditation. And it seems perhaps a nice silent meditation would be to think of Moody Cow's jar with its junk floating around and eventually settling. So let's take a minute to do that and get centered. World beyond and world within, you are often showing bits and pieces of yourself that call for us to attend. Let us attend now as we start the readings and the sermon. So the first reading is a very short little statement from an episode of a TV show in the 1960s called Route 66. Since some people may, in fact, never have seen this show, I'll give a brief explanation. The show followed two guys driving around the United States, originally on Route 66, but then on various other spots around the U.S. One of them, Todd Stiles, was an Ivy League grad and somewhat naive, and his friend was a seasoned guy who had sort of a beatnik sensibility, Buzz Murdoch. In this particular episode, Voice at the End of the Line, Buzz takes time to help this sort of loser guy. He's nondescript, he lacks confidence, he doesn't really have any friends. And Todd does not understand why Buzz keeps on, like, looking out for this guy. And this is Buzz's answer. When he says, "So why are you doing this?" And Buzz says, "I don't know. I don't really dig it myself. Every one of us is born into solitary confinement. We spend the rest of our lives sending out an SOS we hope to heaven someone else will hear. This little guy, well, he's coming in clear as a bell." And do we have someone?
This is titled "A Cup of Tea." Nanin, a Japanese master during the Meiji era, 1868 to 1912, received a university professor who came to inquire about Zen. Nanin served tea. He poured his visitor's cup full and then kept pouring. The professor watched the overflow until he no longer could restrain himself. "It is over full. No more will go in." "Like this cup," Nanin said, "you are full of your own opinions and speculations. How can I show you Zen unless you first empty your cup?"
We are, every one of us is, born into solitary confinement. There's a hole in the middle of the prettiest life. Both of these statements ring true to me. They resonate deeply and have resonated for over half a century. I was about 8 when the dreadful apprehension of existential loneliness hit me as I waited for friends to come out and play. It came in a flash, the realization that I could never know another's experience fully, nor they know mine. It is something many of us may be feeling here today, a sense of disconnection, of isolation. When that realization hit, it came as a big shock and dazed me for a moment. I felt profoundly alone, trapped in my own body, no welcome feeling to someone with a touch of claustrophobia. I didn't share that moment of revelation with my folks, my brother, my teachers, not even the parish priest. At 8, I lacked the language to communicate such a feeling, and I didn't share it with my friends that day or any other. What would other 8-year-olds think of it? I was pretty sure they wouldn't get it, so I kept quiet. Lest you think that I spent the rest of that year, month, or even day in some sort of zombie-like trance, I didn't. My mind turned to play later that day, soon after my friends joined me. And that summer, well, maybe, just maybe, the Red Sox were going to have a winning season. They didn't. Coming in 8th place out of 10. Yeah. Yet as a Unitarian Universalist, I also have a sense of connection, of the interdependent web of all existence of which I am and we are a part. This serves as a powerful counterbalance to the sense of loneliness that never fully goes away. It is my brain and my eyes which see me as apart from the world, but my universalist heart tells me I am a part of the world if only I can hear its call to communion. And that call I often hear, here today, here at Shawnee Mission, and all about. The urgent cry from another, the SOS that Buzz Murdoch spoke of, that I think I can hear as well as anyone. When I hear that urgent cry, I go into meerkat mode. My spider sense starts tingling. I'm not alone in being able to hear a compelling call of distress and in responding. I imagine that's true of a lot of people here, maybe everyone here. That's great, but somehow that's not enough. I need to cultivate a better sense of hearing and to get better at listening to others. One of my listening heroes was a children's librarian at the Onondaga County Public Library System in Syracuse, New York, Cynthia Bishop. She was and is a great storyteller. We became great friends through story. She once told me a story about something that had happened to her as she worked at the library. I was not listening well. Oh, I heard her words. I got the plot of her story. But I missed the signals that she was sending, her call for compassion. I found something humorous in what she was saying as I visually processed the story, and I laughed. That was a misstep that almost cost me an important friendship. She was graceful, however, and agreed to work with me on rebuilding our friendship. In the discussions that followed, she said something which hit me like the words Buzz Murdoch spoke and answered my own truth flash at 8. She said that as she saw it, we listen one another into existence. Physically, of course, this is not the case. But we are not just our biology. We are also the we create in the stories we tell. Our narrative we, our dreams, our fears, our beliefs, that's something more than just our genetic inheritance. It's something we create or share in creating. But when our narrative selves and our stories are not heard, we see that part of us die a little. Our link to the community is frayed, maybe broken for a while, and we feel that existential solitary confinement that Buzz spoke of all the more keenly. Our prison walls close in, and we feel trapped even to the point of despair. As Unitarians, and even more so as Universalists, We know that respect for the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part is a principle we avow and to which we pledge ourselves. The sense of connection in that image suggests an alternate way, a way out of our prisons, a way to join others beyond our walls. One way of tearing down the walls that separate us, of seeing past our prison cells and helping others to do the same, of becoming more deeply aware of the interdependent web, and even of strengthening it, is to listen each other into existence and into freedom. But listening can be hard. A lot of our education, and we as a denomination pride ourselves on being an educated people, is geared to categorizing, labeling, and filing information. Our learning is designed to hone our senses and our brains so we naturally filter out all sorts of things. As we get older, and I'm getting older, these habits get stronger, to the point where we see no truth, hear no voice beyond the system our training has created. As a renowned scholar proud of his knowledge, the professor in that Zen story had come to Japan to learn all about Zen, but as Nanin demonstrates, with a mind full of junk and preconceptions and Western truths, there's no room to learn Zen. First, he had to empty his cup, to let go of his preconceptions, and to listen with an open mind and a loving heart. I was formed as an educated person by 10 years of Jesuit education. There were lots of things I learned from the Jesuits, but their training made me a debater, a rhetorician. Debaters do not always listen to opposing views. They listen for weaknesses in argument. They aim to win. In the context of an actual debate, this is good strategy. But winning an argument on points is no way to build relationships. It's no way to proclaim love, to build a loving world. And it's no way to listen one another into existence. Pride, too, and certainty can get in our way. As I grew up Roman Catholic, the nuns and priests repeatedly reminded me and my friends that the Roman Catholic Church was the true religion. Well, it certainly makes you feel good to hear that you're a part of the true religion, the true faith. But such pride and such certainty can lead us to closing our ears to the truths of other faiths, other religions. In extreme cases, it can lead us to view those from different traditions or different ethnicities with different backgrounds as the other. And so we only reinforce the walls of our fortress or our prison, cut ourselves off from others, and relegate everyone to solitary confinement. In America today, I think we've seen just where such thinking leads, to an us versus them mindset. There is reason that pride stands atop the list of seven deadly sins. It cuts us off from connection. It cuts us off from love. Such pride and certainty, though, is not the sole property of the Catholic Church. And fear plays a part. When I was a kid, if I didn't want to hear something, I would stick my fingers in my ears and start babbling loudly. I can see some of you use the same effective strategy. If I only made enough noise, I wouldn't have to hear an uncomfortable truth. As a rhetorically trained adult, I've done and sometimes still do the same thing. But now I use words as barriers or weapons, keeping other views out to avoid something I fear may change me or my world. The walls get thicker and higher, and I feel no safer, just a lot more cut off. We are now gearing up for the off-year elections. This is a time when all that tribal identification pumps us up and gets us ready for action. We say things that wound, or we remember those wounds we've suffered from others, fearing we haven't been understood, that others don't get our narrative selves, we may shout all the louder. They are likely to do the same. In such a situation, even if we are sure that we've won with our superior logic and our well-marshaled points, we're going to end up feeling wrong. Winning the argument is no good if it cuts us off from community or results in shutting our neighbors down or boxing them in. To build a beloved community, a community we see we need here and abroad in the world, we must listen to the voice at the end of the line and to begin to weave our web together. It will be a challenge, but we as you use face challenges. Though something of loneliness remains, There really is a hole in the middle of the prettiest life. Let us not obsess about that hole or the distance that separates us, but rather let us focus on the greater whole of which each one of us is a part and work together at weaving a stronger web of connection. Thank you. And now our closing hymn.
Oh,
we have a little time.
We could offer some discussion.
Oh, okay. All right. I guess discussion. Any thoughts, observations? Oh.
So we have a little time, and if you would like to share thoughts about Bernie's reflection, we can take a little time to listen to one another right here. Just raise your hand, and I'll bring this over.
Hi, my name's Kathy Hedge. I really appreciate you talking about hearing other people and making it real, because I know how easy it is to say, and I have to fight against this, I know I'm right. My wall is strong, and I don't want anybody to climb over the top of it. And it's very, you know, it's hard to listen to someone else, especially when their view is completely different from yours. And it's a much more safe feeling when my wall is around me and I don't have to worry about those other things coming in. And I was at a meeting this week, and we talked about the whole idea of fake news coming in and crashing on all sides, crossing over walls. And I had to just remind myself, you know, to take, this was through the K-State libraries. And one of the things that they mentioned was to take a pledge where you would actually look for somebody else's view, you know, to purposely go and look maybe at some of those authors that you never read or some of those programs that you never watch, just so you could try to get the perspective and hear what someone is saying outside your own wall. But that's scary. You know, it feels much more secure to have all my defenses put up and not let anybody else in. So I really appreciate you talking about how about that listening.
Thank
you. Diane Barker. I've been thinking a lot about whether democracy really works, or this structure that we have. And it was an Onondaga man, Lloyd Elm, who taught us about how consensus worked. And consensus forces you to listen, because you're not going to look for counting votes, you know, to see whose idea is going to win. Instead, you're going to sit in a room and let each person speak. And as the voice goes around the room, you have to have listened to the people before you, and you get one chance to state your complete estimation of what the issue is, and say you're trying to decide whether you're going to move your winter camp. And if there's no consensus, if you don't agree, then you just say, okay, we'll come back next week. So try to imagine that you're taking out all of this win-win concept that, hey, ha-ha, we got you now. We're going to put all those rules right back. Or, ha-ha, we got you now. We're going to take them away. So I just hope that as we go forward as human beings, we can start to build more of a sense of consensus, which would require really listening.
Uh, somewhat different perspective than Kathy and Diane gave. I teach physics at the university. Mm-hmm. Well, it's thought to be very difficult and so forth. Students come into my office needing help in physics. And thanks to the UU here and my involvement with the religious education program, I have developed long ago a mantra, and that I'm saying it to myself as the kid comes in, shut up and listen. And I'd always thought of it as simply a teaching tool, that I was learning how they were thinking so I could help them think in more useful ways for the problems that they were trying to solve. But listening to you this morning, it occurs to me that probably I was partly helping them, or letting them create themselves. And as soon as I thought that, I remembered just the beginning of the semester. A young woman came in absolutely convinced that she could not do the problems. Mm-hmm. I mean, and the problems were about distance and speed and time and this kind of thing. And I started her off with, well, if you're driving 60 miles an hour for 2 hours, how far do you go? And she got it. And gradually, we moved from there until by the end of the hour, in fact, by the end of 2 hours, she was doing the problems that she needed to be able to do to succeed in the class. And the self-confidence that she exuded when she left and has exuded since, in comparison to what she came in at, is radically different. And I think, thanks to your talk, I now know a little bit more why. So thank you. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. It does feel good as an instructor when someone who's convinced they can't do something can get past that. So, yeah.
Well, I'm a Yankees fan, not a Red Sox fan. But that said, I remember as a kid.
Cubs too.
Okay. The reason I mentioned that, I'm just kidding, is that I remember as a kid, you know, your mind, I could say every Yankees player and what their statistics was, and I resonated with the, obviously my cup is full, right? Like, I can't even process, I can't even get there anymore. Right. But, you know, that was lovely. Like, maybe if we meditated, we have to empty our cup in order to receive right. And hear. And I that was really good, man. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Right.
I think it's interesting that one of the ongoing tropes, I guess you would say, is that we are this nation of rugged individuals and that we live in isolation from one another, and that ideology has been put into political practice, and we've seen this war on poor people, and we've seen a building up. I mean, what Trump is proposing to do, for example, with his military budget will bankrupt this nation. But we're willing to see money spent there and not on infrastructure, not on things that build common bonds between people. And so I was, you know, I remember Route 66 as a child. And, you know, that sort of gave this image of these guys out there on their own going across America. And we've built up that idea to such a point that when we try to engage in conversation about an alternative, we're often discredited instantly because that's not the American way. And so I don't know if you have any reflections on that, but it's really, I think, something we have to start thinking of as a society. We're in this together. It's not a question of of individualism. You don't get anywhere being an individual. You only get someplace when you work together with other people for a common good.
I mainly work at the Kansas City Public Library. That is my main job, but I teach at a community college and I teach Greek mythology, and my background is in the classics. And one of the things, usually in the first lecture, you know, I'll say that it's important for us to be aware of the stories that we tell because they control sort of how we look at things. So rugged individualism can lead you down a path where you disregard other people. And I said, you know, when I was growing up, you know, my dad was a union member. So I tended to think, you know, it's joint action that gets stuff done. And so that's a different sort of viewpoint. And, of course, I grew up in a city where there is no such thing as rugged individualism. You live in a city, there are people all around all the time. So you have to learn to accommodate others and start to appreciate them, or else, you know, you really can't stay in a city long. So, but that is, I mean, that metaphor that we live by is a metaphor and it can be helpful, but it also can blind us to other options, yeah.
Michael Oldfather, an experience I've had, I can't count the times, is somebody says, so you're an economist. Well, that means you must think, and then what comes after that is invariably something I don't think. And so the, you know, what the response is, I'm sorry, I have to go to the bathroom. And, you know, or, you know, something else that gets me off the spot. But one of the things, the lessons it's taught me is that meeting somebody for the first time and finding out, you know, one bit of information about him, and then proceeding from that to paint the whole, to fill in all of the rest of the blanks, is a bad idea. And the more often I can remember to think that the person I'm confronting here or engaged in with is, well, let's give him the benefit of the doubt that he's a good guy or good gal, and that we can find something we can talk about and agree on. You know, boy, this coldest wind is miserable, isn't it? You know, and there are other things. But to look beyond that, to begin to try to look beyond that, to get inside the person that you're engaging with, and to do it without the need to set them straight, I'm working on it, and I think, you know, by the time I put in the rest of my 8 decades, I might get good at it, but maybe not.
Hello, I'm actually a guest of this congregation today, but my name is Link. I just would like to, but something that's really made me think about is how in today's day and age especially, it's very easy to have access to very quick and limited information, especially on sources like Facebook. And I think a lot of that, how we have it thrown in our face all the time, can make it really easy to forget like how much more there is to the story and how much more you can learn from just diving in even a step further. Which honestly, it reminds me of like my grandma and I don't agree on a whole lot. There's definitely a generational gap between the two of us. But we are also very close because we sit and we talk and we listen. We'll spend an entire day just discussing politics. I talk to her about my life and my experiences. She talks to me about her life and her experiences growing up in rural western Kansas. And it's incredible how just sitting and listening for like a few hours even to someone's life story and like where they've come from and where they've been, like that makes it like almost like incredible to see how they've gotten to where they are and why they make the decisions they make and like what led them to this point. And I just think that it's like something really important for I think all of us to remember, especially with how technology is going in the direction I think it's going to continue heading, unfortunately.
Uh,
for giving us this chance to have a conversation, because I think really slowly, and when I hear all of your incredible ideas, then some illumination starts to come. But what the last speaker said kind of hinted at something. It's about how we communicate nowadays is so, the responses are so rapid fire. And I noticed when I got to know some Native Americans, they pace themselves like my dad, who was a Southerner. He had the same habit of there'd be a long space while he thought about what you said. And that really resonated with what you said, Larry, about shut up and listen. Because I notice as soon as I start having a so-called conversation with someone, my mind starts racing. Because I'm pretty old, I think of a million things. And then I have to make myself stop that and try to really hear what they're saying, because I'm already thinking of all the associations that what they're saying reminds me of and what my response is going to be. And so, I mean, I think, like, texting is already abbreviated words and thoughts and works against really having in-depth understanding and conversations with people. And I heard this program about jazz once when I was in my car. It was on the radio. And they said the spaces are as important as the notes. And so, I mean, it takes a while to assimilate what is going into your head from someone else's mind.
Cynthia Bishop, whom I mentioned, during this period where we were reconciling with one another, she handed me a pad of paper and a pen and said, "And while I'm talking, you're probably going to think of a bunch of things. Write them down. And then when it's your turn, you can decide which ones." And that actually did sort of slow me down, so I didn't sort of just jump in, which I was really impressed.
Fantastic. We'll close off our discussion there. And please rise as you are able in body or spirit for hymn 1008 in the Teal Hymnal, "When Our Heart Is in a Holy Place."
within us and around us, calls out to us at all times. We have but to listen. And with those words, this service here is ended, but our service to ourselves, to this community, and to the world beyond continues.